This is Talk of Asian Marketing with a special emphasis on localized Chinese consumer behavior. This is episode beta 2, the most important meal of the day. And here we are today with Dr. James Stanworth down in Tainan. He's a professor of business administration at Tsinghua University in Tsinghua, central Taiwan. James, did you have your breakfast this morning?
I sure did. It was pretty good. I'm not sure that it was many of the things that we're going to look at today. And certainly there was some coffee in there, so I think it's going to be real interesting to compare some of those sort of local dishes we're seeing here and some of the local habits with perhaps what certainly a sort of Western face like mine would tend to do eat in the morning. Looking forward to it.
Yeah, good point. And we have another guest here, Anthony Warden, who of course is my son. He's over in Shanghai at Jiao Tong University studying electrical engineering. And I think you said you missed your breakfast this morning, Anthony?
Yes, I went to class because I woke up late, so I kind of missed my breakfast, which I kind of look forward to, though.
You usually look forward to it, but you missed it today.
Yeah.
How late are the breakfast shops there open to?
Actually, they open until like around 9, I think, and then it turns into lunch.
Ah, so you went to class, there's no way you're going to get breakfast.
No, they serve early lunch.
Yeah, I noticed that when I was there too. It seems like lunch shops start serving lunch really early, but that's another show. That's the lunch show.
Yes.
Today's the breakfast show. So I think today we have some interesting topics. It's going to be a short show. Really the main point is to talk about the differences and the market opportunities. And I don't think this is a very complex situation because the difference, as James mentioned, between the Western and Chinese breakfast are so big. And combine that with a market that's really dominated by small-scale franchises and associations and independents, that there isn't a whole lot of complexity as far as, you know, which stores are here and how many Westerners have gotten into this because basically it's a Chinese game, purely and simple. So I'm going to begin with a little story I had, an experience maybe from 1995, I think, or 96. I was over in Beijing for a conference, and we had traveled with a group of people from Shanghai and a Hong Kong University of Technology there up to Beijing. And we went up to Jiao Tong University, and in fact, and we had a very nice place to stay at. It wasn't on campus. It was outside of campus, and it was a government-run hotel, which means it's not a very westernized big hotel. It's a kind of one-story, spread out, a lot of acres, but really, really well done in Chinese style. And they had these meals, you know, of course, three meals a day. And I remember when we got there, we arrived in the afternoon, and we had a lot of, like I said, people from Hong Kong with us, but more than half of the people were from Europe. So we had a lot of Europeans, especially we had some Irish and some Scottish. We had some people from Belgium, and these guys were all very excited to be in China, and we got our big lunch, and it was the normal Chinese big fare, you know. James, I think you know exactly what I'm talking about. Big Lazy Susan in the middle, lots and lots of courses coming one after another.
Sure, sure, and everyone looks at each other uncertainly about what to do, particularly if they're all Westerners around the table. Yes, it sounds, I've got the picture.
Yeah, some of the mysterious foods coming in, everybody asking what it is. and of course, the normal Chinese answer is, don't ask, just eat. And then the dinner comes, and the dinner is an even bigger affair, and I have to say, it was some really, really good food. There's no doubt about it, and I was very impressed, and it was a great deal for everybody. But then the next day came breakfast, and we all end up going over to the cafeteria area where there's breakfast, and we all have the big round tables we sit at, but they're empty, totally empty. The Lazy Susan's in the middle, but it's empty. And for breakfast, they have one long table where they've piled up basically a buffet style, and you have on there gruel, reheated rice and boiled water, a few shredded meat things, a few different piles of boiled things, maybe beans and soup, a few things like that, nothing special. And that was just about it. And some scrambled eggs, Chinese style. And that was it. And the Westerners were not very pleased with this at all. And I remember we had one professor from Ireland, and he was demanding that they should make a real breakfast. And he just insisted on this. And we had a British guy there, an older gentleman, real nice scholar, smart guy. And he kind of thought, well, yeah, that sounds good. We should at least have a real breakfast at a nice hotel, you know. And they forced the cooks to get up and cook them a regular Western breakfast, which included things like, fried eggs, over easy, and toast, and coffee, and all these things. So it was really interesting because I had already been in Taiwan for a long time, gotten used to it. And I think these guys just didn't, just couldn't see that this food was breakfast, period.
Yeah, yes, absolutely. And I think for many Westerners, it's, I don't know why breakfast has that kind of significance. You come down, you want something nice and familiar, a nice way to start your day. And I think you've got that, lots of people have that mental image of at least a toast, a cup of coffee, a few of these familiar eggs and so on. And they see this kind of thing, and it's like something from a horror movie.
yeah, exactly. I think they were calling it pigeon food or something like that. Yeah, so I mean, in fact, when I first came to Taiwan, I didn't find in the regular stores we shop at, the so-called supermarkets, there were no things like cereal. And in fact, for the first years I was here, when I first came here in the mid-80s, it was impossible to find fresh milk. And in the late 80s, it was still very hard. And if I ever did buy it, I usually did end up spending the next few hours in the bathroom. And it was not a good experience. You could only get powdered milk at best. So things like cereal were definitely not on the menu.
It's interesting, yes, because even now, fresh milk doesn't have that sort of regular feel to it like it would do for a typical Westerner. And my wife is often looking for cream. You just can't find like regular double cream that people use for cooking here at all. It's real hard to get it.
Yeah, good point. That stuff's just so hard to get. And it's just, things like this that are such staples for breakfast, things like the milk, the kind of fried eggs over easy, and the bread in the form of toast, it's what I call alien food. Now, for people here, it's the alien food because it's just not something they think about very much. Anthony, of course, when you grew up in Taiwan, so you kind of got used to that, but you've been in America a few times, and you've seen the breakfast they have there. You kind of have a picture of that, right?
Yes.
What do you think about that as far as how Chinese think about those kinds of breakfasts, which is kind of what James is saying, kind of maybe cereal and fried eggs and toast and milk, coffee, of course?
Well, if I were a Chinese, if I were like a very Chinese person, and I went to see these Western food, I would think it's kind of like overdoing it because it's too much for breakfast, I think. Because like here, it's usually just a baozi, one of those buns with pork inside.
Yeah, steamed bun, steamed with something inside of it.
Mm-hmm. And then just doujiang on the side, and that's it. That's breakfast.
Doujiang being soy milk.
Yes.
And yeah, that's like breakfast. A simple sort of soy milk, sometimes sweetened, isn't it? And this still, for me, wouldn't do for breakfast.
Yeah.
And this is a good point. I think that if we look at traditional Chinese breakfast. So I went back and I looked at some old novels and I looked at some of old research that's been around for a long time. And for sure, I think the deal is that Chinese traditionally have pretty big lunches. And I think James is very familiar with, those social power lunches that Chinese have. They can get pretty big. And then dinner, of course, is a family affair. if not a business affair. I mean, the family affair is more normal, but it could be with business people or meetings outside too. And that's going to, by standard definition, be a big meal with lots of different choices. Even a small Chinese meal has many different options on the table. And so people eat that up, and there's always going to be leftovers. And my experience is that, you know, you can eat a big dinner, even a very late dinner, maybe even a late snack, and leftovers get thrown in the fridge or left on the table, and they get heated up in the morning for breakfast. And that's really the source of what I see most people's conceptualization of breakfast in China, in Taiwan, is, you know, it's just basically a very light kind of thing, some leftovers, and that's it.
Mm-hmm. I think that's I think maybe it touches on the whole idea of frugality as well. You know, the anything that can be used and put to a purpose is often sort of used, and so, you know, the concept of throwing what's perfectly good food away or not using it or not getting the best from it is, it just doesn't fit. So yeah, it's a whole recycling thing. So you see your big chunks of what you saw the previous night appear again in the morning.
Yeah, that's a good point. And that's good. I mean, the frugality in a number of ways, right? You don't waste what's there. And people must realize if you have these big meals with so many courses, there's no way it can all be consumed. And Chinese are not very apt, as you say, James, just throw it away. That's just not something they're going to do. But at the same time, to leave it for another dinner, another night, and heat it up, that's not so normal either. So I think, yeah, it just naturally ends up to be breakfast. I mean, I've seen it. You go out the countryside and travel around a bit, and it's very normal that people will have their dinner tables, and they put nets over them. They're kind of like a dome net. And they just lay that over the meal, and it sits there overnight, and then that food is reheated for breakfast in the morning.
Yes, reheated, reconstituted into sort of slightly different forms. I don't know whether, like the steamed bun that Anthony mentioned, whether what's inside is actually what was the night before's meal.
That's a good.
Yeah, that's very highly possible.
That's a good point. It is hidden inside there, reheated and steamed. So I guess if you did have some leftovers, that'd be a perfect place to hide them, right?
Because yeah. I was thinking, you know, it often isn't exactly the same. You don't see the exact same dishes, but they've kind of been reworked a little bit in kind of a slightly interesting way.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah. On the photos on the webpage down there, I've got the first photo is gruel, which is just the leftover rice, add some water, boil it. And, you know, I think I see this all the time, and it's something that I just never acquired a taste for. And I think from James, what you're saying, it's not something that pushes your buttons very much either.
No, certainly not for breakfast. This would be, yeah, sometimes, occasionally, my wife, who's Taiwanese, and I would go out and have this maybe for a snack, but late on in the day, it sort of, for me, it fits much better as a meal for like lunch or evening.
So you've seen it around as a regular meal, and I think that's a point. Yes, this is so popular, it's used breakfast, lunch, and dinner, but it seems to be a breakfast staple people relate to. And picture number two is the shredded meat, which here is the bahu, the shredded pork meat. Anthony, you like that, don't you?
Yeah, it's kind of like a topping for Chinese, just as Caesar is a topping for salad.
It's for salad, huh?
So, I mean, this is not for salad, but it's kind of the same way as a topping.
Parallel, yeah. I see. It's kind of like same idea. You just put it on top of all different kinds of food, right?
Yes, especially Chinese food.
So I think the point is, you know, when you're competing with this kind of breakfast market, whereas simplicity is it, frugality because leftovers are used, and frugality in the sense of people aren't going to really fill up. I mean, I don't see Chinese emphasizing having that big meal in the morning, which I think for Westerners, they kind of got this idea you need that energy to get moving. But for Chinese, I think they prefer the lean approach, which is stay lean and mean rather than filling up in the morning. James, would you kind of agree with that?
Yes, it's kind of interesting, isn't it? Yes, that kind of sits true. Yes, we often have that tradition. Maybe you have it in the States. Certainly we do in UK, of the very big cooked breakfast, just like you were talking about, the Irish guy looking for that, which is something that's usually really big and heavy. We're talking toast, we're talking eggs, we're talking sausage, bacon, tomatoes, fried tomatoes. The big cooked breakfast is something that's designed to set you up for the day. And people often talk about being set up for the day, and I think that's real different from a lot of these fairly light dishes that the Chinese have got. It's almost like if you're light, you're sort of fighting fit rather than slowly getting the energy for the day.
Yeah, right. Good point. On picture number three, I've got kind of what is the new development, which is not new. I think this would be maybe from late 80s, early 90s kind of developing. I did notice when I was first here in the 1980s in Taiwan, there weren't breakfast shops all over the place. It wasn't that easy to find. I think everybody was basically just eating those leftovers at home. But as demographics change, more and more people working, this becomes more difficult to manage, even those few minutes, you know, to get together. It's so hard in Taiwan because parents take their kids to school themselves. There are school buses, but they're very limited in the areas they go to. So even if you have a school bus, you have to drive your children to get to the stop. And I think this is true in China, too. Parents are responsible to get their kids to and fro. And in the morning, there's just not that extra time, so we've got a lot of stands developing everywhere. And this is what I call a transformer stand, picture number three. Transformer in the sense of that Japanese cartoon where they transform. I love these little ones. They drive around their little square trucks, and then they pop open, and all these different trays and cooking areas pop open. And picture three and four have this, and they have lots of food to select, but they cook to order also. James, have you ever stopped at one of these stands?
I've not actually stopped at a stand like this in the morning. I mean, there you see them, of course, for snacks right through the day, but this one looks really super organized with, I guess, your tea is on the left, sort of in the middle. It looks like they've even got maybe a coffee vending machine, is it, on the extreme left?
They do. They have drinks, teas, and I don't know if they have coffee. I think they have cold coffee. Anthony, would you think they serve coffee in these breakfast stands?
I hardly doubt it, because this is more student-oriented, I think.
This one is a student. Well, this is right in front of a school. I was lucky. I drove by a school. I took all these shots, and there must have been at least 10 vendors in front of this school. So, yeah, I think this one is student. And maybe that's the demographic for these mobile ones, James. It's around schools. Parents are in a rush. They don't want their kids to go without any food. So on the way to school, the kids can just drop by one of these vendors and pick them up. These vendors are not unusual. We have them all in the U.S., especially in big cities like New York, Philadelphia, Los Angeles. But usually they're like lunch vendors, hot dogs, hamburgers kind of thing. And as James said, we have them in Taiwan through the day, but these are just breakfast ones. These stands set up for breakfast. And I've seen some of these guys. I've lived by one that runs one of these stands. Basically, they sell in the morning. That's it. They're done for the whole day. So they make enough money that they're not out there with another stand at lunch. So I think there's a lot of cash flow going on, a lot of profit, really good profit margin on this stuff. Anthony, if you went to one of these stands, what's a typical breakfast cost?
Well, around 30 NT dollars.
30 NT dollars, so that's around US dollar?
Less than one US, yes.
Wow, that's pretty cheap.
Well, that is like the simple. You have something to eat, one single course, and then you have something to drink. Of course, people, I believe, nowadays buy a lot, because I've really seen people who buy like two free sandwiches and they eat it through the day until lunch. So just depends on how much do you want.
Gotcha. It is a good value in a way, but you see people buying more than just one. So these, and I see people line this picture right here. I just took by chance people lining up, and the kids just line up all for the hour before school starts, getting one after another. So I think they do really brisk business.
Yeah, I was going to say, for your dollar, what sort of thing do you buy for like your 30 NT breakfast? What will you walk away from the wagon with?
It's like usually one course, single, and is like mentioned above, where the text says it would be a rice ball or a rolled egg pancake, or any of just one single course. You don't buy it's because it's usually served like a special meal order. You know, they say you buy this egg roll pancake with this drink costs you 30 NT.
So they have a bundle price.
Yeah, that's real neat, isn't it? Yes, you can see it looks like Mum in this picture that we've just been looking at and talking about, like Mum on the left and then a group of kids and the guy just serving things up.
They'll fry things up for you. Lots of the stands have that. Small ones don't, but medium one size do. There used to be one right at a train station at Tainan where I'd get off and I'd buy breakfast there. Every morning I was heading over to Chenggong University. And just like Anthony says, you get a basically, I get like a hamburger set up. It's a hamburger with an egg in it and a piece of meat, kind of like a McMuffin in a way, like that, and a doujiang drink. And that was, I think that was 25 NT back 8 years ago. And when it went up to 30, I refused to buy anymore because I thought the price rise was outrageous.
Now you're showing the age. there's still so many exciting photos here. What are some of the other ones that you looked at here, Clyde?
The fifth and sixth one are the more traditional kind of stand, and this is where they sell the rice ball Anthony was talking about, and this is specifically a stand for just rice balls, and that is the same as picture 11, where the woman. Real easy setup. She comes out with a container of rice that stays heated for the next few hours. She puts up a nice big sign that says rice ball here and starts serving it up. And I think it's rice you put into a plastic bag and then you jam into the center something like shredded meat or something like that. And you roll it up with your hand through the bag so you don't actually touch the rice. And then you hand it to the customer. And those are called rice balls, right, Anthony?
Yes, yes, that's how they do it. Sometimes you can add special things inside too, actually. You could say you would want like extra meat or extra spice, and they put it in before they roll it up.
Yeah, and then they squeeze the bag, and then it just forms a ball inside that little plastic baggie.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I know, I've eaten it before, I'm not crazy over it, but it seems like these stands get lots of business, and if you look at the pictures, you can see the capital investment is really minimal. We're not talking about a major investment here, even less than the transformer stand. The supplies there are very minimal.
Yes, like you're saying, Clyde, in like 12, is picture 12 here is such a classic example of a little breakfast shop. I mean, it's just barely even inside the chap's kind of house area. He's got a little corner sort of tucked somehow into his property. Just a little cooker, a little stand up front where you can see the bowls and so on stacked. And then the tables and chairs are stuck right out on the road. So it's sort of almost using the public highway as his restaurant eating place. Absolute minimal investment and just sucking in the money.
Yeah, exactly. In fact, in this area here, the rent for a regular store would be over 100,000 NT a month, which would be $3,000 to $4,000 US dollars a month. So it would be really hard to recoup that kind of fixed cost on just these breakfasts. But as you say, you know, these guys, they get a little tiny corner somewhere. They put most of the seating out in the road. And this has to do with what I've been studying for a while, what I call the inside-out effect, because it also draws attention easily for other shoppers who are looking for breakfast, and Chinese really feel comfortable with this inside-out and seeing people all sitting down there. And in fact, you can see, this is what I call the medium-level store. It is a store, but it's not very set up very formally. They have a limited selection, but you can sit down. They have some soups, maybe, And here you can see there even looks like a business white collar worker. He's sitting down eating on his way to work also.
Yes, I think that last point you just made is shown so nicely in this photo. Right on the left, we've got what looks like a sort of average, maybe a worker. On the right, a white-collar worker. You've got the kids heading off to school right in the middle there. And it just reflects how this sort of going for breakfast and this kind of stand is not targeted at one group. It's kind of a very generic way of getting a breakfast in the morning. It's yeah, great point.
Yeah, I think that's really a key of this market is the demographics are highly mixed because there's not really anybody sitting down to spend a lot anyway. So they're all grabbing the very same thing. It's a very democratic restaurant. The next level up are the pictures. The last few pictures I have here, 13, 14, and 15. And these are much bigger shops. Now, these are sit-down shops. You can go inside of them. Sometimes they're totally enclosed, especially if it's wintertime. Often they're not. They just have the doors open, and the shop has no glass or walls besides just the supports of the building. And you walk in on the first floor, and the cooking is all done around the outside, and you can sit on the inside. And here we have some really fancy stuff, including soups and noodles and different types of doujiang. And these shops are a little bit more expensive, but they also do a really brisk business.
I've just been spooling through those shots. I think the other really sort of great thing that you notice immediately when you walk in these stores is people say, well, your first reaction is it must be really dirty. But you notice, like in this picture 15, everything looks really clean, organized. All the time they have this cloth, like you can just see just on the edge of picture 15, just there to wipe down the surface, keep everything nice and clean. Sometimes they even have the little fans going to keep the flies off the food.
Uh-huh.
And so even in these most basic kind of breakfast places, I've never had a stomach problem at all. It's always real good, fresh food and clean, easy to eat. So it's real nice. I don't know about your both of your experiences, if they're positive like mine.
Yeah, I think I've had positive experience too. I'm not sure if it's just because I don't eat a whole lot for breakfast, but I've been to these shops before and I've never had problems getting a stomach problem. And some of the shops can look very run down from the outside, but the cooking equipment is usually just like James is saying, just like the stainless steel. It's wiped down.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the time people are taking out anyway, so you get everything put into a plastic bag or a plastic container. If you eat there, you use their bowls. And I don't do that much, but I think that, yeah, it's not a big problem. And then lots of things in the breakfast are just boiled right there on the spot. And so, Anthony, have you gotten sick from eating breakfast before? I know you used to pick up a lot of breakfasts and head off to class. You ever end up with an upset stomach?
No, I don't think so. No, because it's really, they make it right there.
Yeah, well, you've told me you have a stomach of iron, so I'm not sure you're the best person to ask.
But usually it's made like picture 14. I think like they have those. I think they're buns with meat inside. I'm not really sure, but they're not fried yet,
mm-hmm.
or they're already fried like 2 days ago. But you choose what you want, and they fry it up again.
Right.
So it's pretty nice.
So you choose what you want here. They're gonna drop it in the boiling oil anyway. And in the back of that picture, you can even see the stove where they cook things up fresh right there. So, yeah, I think that's the key. So these shops, I think a lot of Westerners, if they do come to Taiwan or China, Hong Kong's a little bit special. I want to talk about in a minute. But if they do come here, they tend maybe not to be up for breakfast. Or if they are, they go to the hotel breakfast, which is the continental Western breakfast. But if they do go outside, they might feel these places don't look that great. They don't look that hygienic, and they might be afraid about that. But in the show links, I've added some links to some other sites that talk about how good the breakfast are. And if you can get out and try it, it's really, really enjoyable. Of course, I do have a McDonald's shot, and this leads me to the next topic I wanted to talk about, James, which is, you know, why has this market not been dominated yet or taken over or even kind of attempted at by Western chains besides McDonald's. I think they're the only Western chain that does any kind of breakfast here, unless you count 7-Eleven, which also does do this, but they sell mostly rice balls and buns in the morning. But McDonald's does do a regular breakfast. But, you know, I've never been impressed with their business volume.
Yeah, I think when you look at McDonald's, they've got this manufacturing model to creating a hamburger. And then when you come to look at some of the breakfast items that we've been looking at, like the congee and the these deep-fried items, they just don't sort of fit too well into the way McDonald's produce items. I've not checked, but I guess that some of the sort of egg muffin products must sell quite well, though, for breakfast from McDonald's.
I've been watching that for a while, and I've sat in a number of McDonald's for breakfast, and I think that their McMuffin breakfasts do sell. I mean, I have a picture here of two girls. They just walked out, two schoolgirls, and you can see inside there's another school boy in there waiting in line to buy something. But they just don't do near the volume of even one of these small stands. Like, for example, the rice ball stand I took a picture of is directly across the street from this McDonald's, does much better business. I think it's a combination of you've only got that one thing, which is the egg on the bread. And this itself is a new development. This is not a traditional Chinese food. This is something that developed through the 90s. So this is an imported Western idea taken over by these small operators who said, hey, we can do that easy. They do it easy and cheap. But at McDonald's, instead of paying 30 NT for a meal, you're going to be paying, I think their breakfast is 80 NT for the most simple breakfast, and then it goes up from there. So you're looking at a real price differential.
Yeah. Yes, I think that's the big difference from McDonald's. The kind of pricing when you go to McDonald's, you get enticed in by a low price, but by the time you've walked out with a meal deal or you've bought a couple of things, then actually the cost of that is going to be much higher. And it just doesn't have that same convenience that we've just looked at. You know, the little truck parked outside the school, the little truck on the way to work, it just doesn't have that same sort of convenience of these other formats that we've seen.
Yeah, I think that's a key point, that convenience. Of course, McDonald's is everywhere now in Taiwan and in China, but in Hong Kong, but it doesn't compare to being right at the gate of your school when the parents can drop you off and you just walk away from your parents' motorcycle and then grab that meal and walk right in. Anthony, you've had a McDonald's breakfast before, right? Any impression about that compared to Chinese breakfasts?
You mean like how it tastes?
Yeah, what's your impression of it?
Well, actually, McDonald's breakfast for students would be like high-class food, I think, because when like anybody in our class would buy the McDonald's breakfast, everybody go like, whoa, you had McDonald's for breakfast? You know, it's like, it's just not a normal thing to do, because it's, first of all, it's like more expensive in price differential, and it doesn't really fill you up, actually, because it's like these two little things and then maybe a cup of soda, you know, watered down soda. So I actually think the stand's food are much better.
That's interesting you point that out. Yeah, so McDonald's, the regular McMuffin meal is you get the bread with the piece of pork and egg in it. Then you get a fried piece of potato, which actually at the regular Chinese stands you can buy also. It's called a su-ping, right? What's that called in Chinese, Anthony?
Yeah, su-ping, yes.
Su-ping, yeah. It's just the fried mashed potatoes cut up and fried, right? You can buy that at any stand too. So I think my point is that the Western format came into Taiwan in the 90s, early 90s especially, but it's so easily imitated for those small things. And then the convenience factor, and as Anthony says, that kind of price thing. So Anthony, when you were in high school and you were going to class, were there people just had McDonald's consistently? Like one rich guy always had it?
No, never. Even if I know some people in your class were rich, well, they are rich now, still rich, but they don't have like high. They still buy the same breakfast we have, because actually I think they prefer it, because every time it's like we might like discuss what to buy for breakfast when we go out to breakfast stands, you know, and it's like it's. He actually doesn't really go for McDonald's that much, and he did point out to me before that these breakfast stands are convenient and they really taste nice.
Yeah, I think those are the key points. That's great. Yes. You know, I think this is a really good point to make, because so many people can visit a Taiwan or a China and see McDonald's everywhere and just think, you know, this is it. This is the model that dominates the market. But at least in this sector, breakfast sector, it doesn't dominate the market at all. And you have all of these other fragmentations. I'm going to put some links in the bottom of the show notes, some show links to some stories. There's a good story, it's in Chinese, about the very beginnings of the breakfast association and franchise chains, where they help each other to get purchasing together and logistics together, so even these small operators can increase their efficiency, because it's just basically a huge market. Anthony, I just wanted to ask you, since you're right there all of the time, you know, in Taiwan we see these breakfast shops everywhere, the ones that are in the stands, the ones that are in an actual store, the ones that are halfway in the street. You know, when I was in Shanghai before, just last year, I didn't really see that many. I had to walk a ways to find some people selling on the street, and they didn't have nearly the options. Lots of the stands didn't have doujang at all. You had to just work out your drinks some other way. So what's your impression of that? Are people in China as crazy about breakfast as we seem to see these days in Taiwan?
Actually, I think Taiwan has grown a lot in the breakfast industry, because it has, like, in China, let's say, I have breakfast usually are still, like, restaurant business. So, like, I went to this shop the other day, this breakfast shop. It has two meals. One is for breakfast. Like, it has two signs. Say breakfast is, they have list of products. This one is for breakfast, and then right next to it is lunch and dinner. So it's just, they usually have it in the same shop. And I do seldom see these little stands. Like, they have, like, these very big barrels of probably rice or zhou bao inside of them.
Zhou bao, yeah.
But it's just, like, single item, that's all. No drinks, no nothing.
Yeah, I mean, when I went out to get stuff to eat in the morning, when I am in Shanghai, this happened to me when I'm in Beijing also. You know, I had to walk a ways, and when I found someone, it was, each stand was doing one thing. You know, if they were doing the zhenjiao, it was just zhenjiao, and that was it.
Yes.
If it's the roll bao, it was just that, you know, and there was no big selection. So people have told me, and when I look back when I first came to Taiwan in the mid-80s, I think that market has really, really developed a lot. And I suspect it's just, like I say, families, demographics being busy. And I think there's a real big opportunity here for Western firms, but they're going to have to really change their assumptions about what breakfast is and what people are interested in eating, even though they may see a McDonald's. Because as Anthony points out, James, you know, it's one thing to see a store and see people going in. But then if you don't see the part of the market where so many of the people are going, then you've really kind of blindsided yourself or gotten what we call marketing myopia, where you're really not seeing the whole picture.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, just to ask Anthony, like you were saying earlier, Anthony, you just don't tend to go to McDonald's in the morning for breakfast, but then I guess you seem to go to McDonald's sometimes. When would you normally head into McDonald's?
Well, McDonald's, usually we go to McDonald's for like a special occasion, because like in Taiwan, this might be another topic, but in Taiwan food are really cheap, and we would go to McDonald's for a birthday party, for example, or if it was after midterm or finals, you know. So it's not that often we go to McDonald's, actually.
Kind of a group behavior, yeah.
So yeah. For like a big event, like the birthday party or the celebration, but why do you choose McDonald's for that kind of celebration? Is it for the food, or why does it become like a preferred sort of choice?
Well, I think it's because, first of all, the space, because it has, like, you see these little restaurants outside, Taiwan Chinese restaurants, they're really tiny, actually. They don't have a lot of stands.
Yeah.
And McDonald's, first of all, they have the space, and they're more organized for mass amount of people, I think.
Well, that's so really interesting.
That's why I
started. Yeah, because what I've seen, it's not just the group social, but when I've observed McDonald's, and we've been out there kind of collecting field data for marketing, and we see families go there, grandparents with grandchildren going there, even though the grandparents don't touch any of the food, and even though the grandchildren may not touch the food much besides playing with it, you see massive amounts of McDonald's food being thrown out. I'd love to, you know, get a number on what percentage of McDonald's food is never actually consumed. It's something about the atmosphere you get in there. Maybe, Anthony, also you get there and nobody cares what you do, since it's not really a shop owner running at the shop. They let you hang out.
Yes.
And it's air-conditioned and fairly clean as well, so it's kind of, particularly in Shanghai, it must get real hot in the summer.
Oh, yeah. About that, it's McDonald's is a place like for high-end people to go. So actually you see these people, just like the metro in summer, they have air conditioning. And these people just buy like the single lowest price thing, and they just stay inside McDonald's all day long just for the air conditioning. I don't really think it's for the food, actually. It's for the other things, like the space and the free air conditioning.
Yeah, this is my sort of observation watching people go to McDonald's and even maybe KFC too. You've got this nice open space. It's easy as a big group to get in there and have lots of people around. It's pretty clean. You've got the AC running. You want to sort of go hang out and maybe have a little group meeting or do some of work or homework assignments, then no one's going to bother you while you sip away on that drink for 2 hours or so. Really the point that sort of means that the breakfast market is real different from these other markets. In the breakfast is a lot about convenience and speed and picking something up and just getting yourself set for the day very, very quickly. And people just don't spend a lot of time on it. They want to get into their day. And so a kind of McDonald's breakfast of sitting down and going through that whole thing, I don't think makes sense. So someone wanting to make a move into this kind of market needs to really look at some of these consumer kind of habits in real kind of depth and get real close, because the sort of habits that the Westerner, like the Irish, who demands the cooked breakfast in the morning, are real, real different from the Chinese customer who's just diving through, grabbing his steamed bun, a quick doja, and then just heading to get on with his day's work. Really different.
Yeah, that's a good point, James, even though when you think about in Canada, I think they have like one of the biggest donut chains. U.S. too, I think. I'm not sure about the U.K., but the U.S. and Canada dominated breakfast by these donut chains where you go in, you get a donut, you get a coffee. But here, just like what you're saying, that probably wouldn't fly either, because like you say, people are getting in and out. And even the coffee shops here, your coffee shops that are doing real big, like for example, Starbucks. I think Starbucks, some of them do open for breakfast, lots of them don't. Your really big coffee chains here don't even open in the morning, because that's just, you know, that's not what the people are going there for. They're going there to sit down and socialize, do business deals. But breakfast is all about getting in, getting out, and just moving fast.
Yes, yes. I too went to Beijing way back in 1994, and I had not been exposed to the Chinese environment at all, and this was one of the biggest things I noticed. People literally moving the last bite of food to their mouth, and as their hand went back to the table, the chopsticks went down, and all in one fluid motion, they're just standing up and leaving.
Just on the go.
Yeah, it just... That's what it's about. It's about speed. It's about convenience. It's about refueling and getting on with the next task. Well, basically, the next task of making money.
Yeah, there you go. That's what it's all about. Which is the last point, and I have a video on the page, and that's a video of me going into one of these shops. This is an indoor shop. There is seating, but you'll notice there's not many people seated there. Go in there, get what you're going to get, and you take it out, and it's all very, very convenient. You're in and out in just a couple minutes, and a very large selection. In this case, I grabbed some noodles for breakfast. No coffee, and that's a little bit different than what's popular in Hong Kong. The many times I've been in Hong Kong, they have a very popular kind of hybrid breakfast, a little bit Chinese, a lot of UK influence, and they do a milk coffee, which I'd never got used to because it's just not enough coffee, nor is it enough milk. It doesn't do enough for me either way. What's this deal with milk coffee? Is milk coffee at all popular in the UK, James?
No, not like that. It's, as you say, it's really frustrating, isn't it? For me, I'm so looking forward to a nice cup of coffee, and then what I get is kind of just too much milk, just too little coffee, and it's just, to put it crudely, it's like a bad orgasm. It just doesn't quite make it.
Yeah, it doesn't cut it, does it?
It just doesn't cut it. I mean, it's just not like that Western hot cup of coffee, fairly strong with a bit of milk in it. It's a different taste, and often they automatically put sugar in it. So if you buy it cold, it's got sugar in it. If you buy it warm, often the immediate thing is to put sugar in it too. So again, a different kind of taste.
Yeah, and they're just everywhere in Hong Kong. It seems to be that everyone drinks that, and I also have seen it in Singapore, although it didn't seem to be as universally consumed as in Hong Kong. So that's something different there. Okay, last comments as we wrap it up. I think I just wanted to say I think it's a really big market, and it's a market that's a great example of local consumer behavior, because if you don't get up in the morning and drive around, you'd never see it. You'd really totally miss it. Very contrasting with Western markets, American and UK markets, where we don't have any similarity really between the foods. So I just think it's a great case study of, you know, what's possible in this kind of market. I'm not sure I know what's possible, but I think it's a really big market and a lot of opportunity if you can think of the right way. That's kind of how I see this breakfast meal market. James, any last thoughts?
Absolutely. Just echo exactly what you've said there, Clyde. I think that when we look at the Chinese way of eating breakfast, all these dimensions like Anthony's talked about, in terms of getting in, having something that's really just simple, like one dish and a cup of something to go. It's the concept of breakfast, what the type of food you're going to eat, and the speed and the convenience that just really make it kind of pretty different from what the Western mindset's about. So people that either want to come and open up a chain, or they want to sort of exploit this market, I've got to get real close and spend time seeing how people actually do that, because the values and the expectations are very different, I think. Very different.
Yeah, that's a good point. Anthony, any last thoughts?
You've said it all, actually.
I think you're out of energy because you missed your breakfast.
Yeah, that's the thing. Well, the most important thing is to really speed. I think the speed really matters, to have a fast, but fat, you get it fast and you can take it anywhere you want.
It's kind of hard for you to imagine. I think the typical American donut shop is people sit down, take it easy, have a nice long cup of coffee. Hard to picture that in China.
Yeah. Unless they were like million years, I think.
Millionaires.
I don't think. Yeah, sorry. I don't think nobody really sits down to have breakfast that much.
Yeah, it would be it'd be hard to imagine how you got to be a millionaire if that's the way you treated breakfast. Yeah,
for sure.
Okay, y'all, thanks a lot for your help, and that wraps it up for today. See you next time. This is Talk of Asian Marketing, with a special emphasis on localized Chinese consumer behavior. Oh,